Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday morning. In just a moment, one of our favorite guests, Professor Julian Zelizar. The guy is really bright and so well-spoken, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of many, many books that look at various presidencies, national security policies since World War II, etc. We have a lot to talk about. The news breaking on the national front every day. Today, the news that President Obama will propose further tax increases on the affluent to help pay for his promise to make health care more accessible and affordable. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Professor Zelizar's, I think, pretty interesting column. He writes a lot of them. Bipartisanship is not always good. Maybe this president doesn't need it. So we're going to talk about all of those subjects and then some in a moment. I'm here with Rhonda Fanning. It's our winter membership drive, and we are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. As you know, you are the foundation of what keeps us running here, so we ask you to make your pledge at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552. Rhonda, of course, our wonderful producer. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's hard to follow that. We have a goal this hour of $2,500.
All right.
And meeting that goal helps us make this program possible in the days, weeks, months to come. So your contribution in any amount, be it $60, $120, any amount you choose helps gets us there. So make your pledge now online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552 and get us started this hour.
Rhonda Book's terrific guest for this show. Julian Zelizar is one of our favorites, Rhonda. The guy is just... he's just very, very smart. He's very well-spoken. He's extremely engaging, and we learn a lot from him. And when you think about all the topics we've covered with him, the campaign, the endless campaign, the transition, et cetera, there's been so much going on politically, and he's one of our favorite guests to analyze politics in this country. We have all kinds of interesting guests, and you have the opportunity to hear their opinions, and then they can hear your opinions and comments and take questions. So think about how much you love this program, how much it enriches your life. It certainly does ours. And make your contribution to support it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's interesting, Kathleen, that you say Julian is one of our favorite guests to have on the program, which is true, but the opposite is likewise. Julian, this is one of his favorite formats. He does media all around the country, throughout the world. He's constantly on CNN doing other public radio programs, but he keeps coming back to Wisconsin Public Radio because he enjoys the interview he gets with Kathleen Dunn, and he enjoys the callers, our listeners, their questions, their intellect, their insights. So pledge not only for this program, but pledge for yourselves and the fact that you keep these guests wanting to come back to Wisconsin Public Radio each and every week, each and every month. And if you've never contributed to Wisconsin Public Radio, it is so easy. This is how it's done. When you contribute online at WPR.org, you just fill in a couple of blanks. It takes just a couple of moments. Or if you call toll-free 888-202-2552, we're going to ask you your name, your address, your phone number, and how much you would like to give. You get to decide. We'll ask how you would like to pay with a credit card. You can send in a check. We can send you a reminder or a bill in the mail. We never sell or trade your personal information. That is kept private between you and Wisconsin Public Radio. So please call now, 888-202-2552, or log on to WPR.org.
This goal of $2,500 is important. It keeps us on track, and we're going to stay on track with all that's going on in political news, and there is so much. It's day after day. We also haven't had a chance to respond to President Obama's speech, the non-State of the Union, State of the Union speech, which we will do with Professor Zelizar as well. So we ask that you pledge. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you.
All right, 202-888, that is 202-2552. For you to pledge. Professor Julian Zelizar is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's the author of many books that examine U.S. political leaders, policies, and institutions since the New Deal. Books of his include Rightward Bound, Making America Conservative in the 1970s, On Capitol Hill, The Struggle to Reform Congress and Its Consequences, 1948 to 2000. And he is currently, this guy's a busy guy, working on four other books. He's working on a book about Jimmy Carter, and I believe he's working on a book about the Reagan Revolution. And He's also writes for CNN, and he writes for Newsweek, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, the LA Times, the Boston Globe, American Prospect. He's on television. He's on radio. He's our guest, and we're welcoming phone calls for him as well. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Professor Zelizer, hello. Thanks again so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
President Obama proposing further tax increases on the affluent to pay for health care to make it more accessible and affordable. Is this going to be controversial? Is this a good idea?
It will certainly be controversial. I mean, this is one of the key issues for the Republican Party. It has been for the last, 30 years. And often they've been very successful in focusing on tax increases above any other issue. So I think Obama's aware of that, but he's setting himself up for a pretty big political challenge. I mean, it's the combination of a bold domestic agenda, health care, the environment, economic stimulus, combined with paying for it in part through these tax increases.
Isn't it every day that goes by, Professor Zelizer, I think, my gosh, this guy has a lot going on. It's just amazing.
Oh, absolutely. This is someone who has not been deterred by the state of the economy or by some of the rougher times he's had in his first month with the economic stimulus bill, the failure to get bipartisan support. You know, instead of backing away, he seems to have become more bold. And so he's working on many things at once, and he's also just as ambitious as in the campaign.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the non-State of the Union, State of the Union address?
I thought it was good. I mean, I thought politically it was obviously successful. People reacted pretty well to it. I think people like to see presidents who are trying a lot, even if they don't agree with everything they're doing. I think there's a certain amount of respect that a president can get from that. I thought if there was kind of a weakness, it was the core issue many Americans are worried about right now is the economy. And he talked a little bit about a credit crisis being at the heart of it. But then he moved on to the other issues, and I think he needs to do more now to explain to Americans what exactly is going on and how he's intending to fix it. Because at some point, the popularity will diminish. It's inevitable. And I think that's something that's going to be important to sell a lot of these other programs, and I thought it was a little kind of too quick, and that's something I just noted while I was watching it.
Mm-hmm. And the popularity will diminish when what? These plans don't work? Or
that's part of it. I mean, one big issue is, you know, how tolerant will Americans be of big programs if they don't have clear payback? You know, say 6 months from now, the economy is doing worse than today. How will Americans be feeling about rather large government programs that are now identified with the Democratic Party? They're not bipartisan. That's one area of danger. Second is just the natural wear and tear of any presidency. You know, as you do more, as you get involved in more battles, often some more people won't like you. And, you know, this budget will kind of earn him some enemies without any question. So that's something every president expects. And legislators start to think about the 2010 midterms pretty quickly and will start campaigning rather soon. So all that's about to happen. And so he understands it. I think that's part of why he's moving so fast, so quickly.
Mm-hmm. And how much time will we need to give him to see if those economic policies are working? Is it 6 months? Is it a year?
It's not a science. I mean, it's political. And I think part of it is his ability to tell Americans, look, this is the problem the economy faces, and here are some measures that show us this is working, even though the economy is still doing badly, things are getting better. And it's going to be his ability to make that case over the opposition, which is going to say, look, 6 months, all this spending, and things are worse. How can we, you know, ask for more at this point?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a battle to define events, to define statistics, and to define the legislation.
GM is coming back asking for more money. They're close to bankruptcy. Should we let them go?
It depends on your perspective. Obviously, the impact of a company like GM closing would be enormous. It's not ideal that the government basically saves them. But on the other hand, it's unclear Americans are willing to have that much more unemployment and all the other effects that come when a company like that closes down. So it might be just kind of a necessity at this point rather than is it a good or bad idea.
You wrote an article recently, it was in Politico actually, bipartisanship is not always good. Before we shower praise on a coalition, if we have this little bitty coalition, it's worth remembering, you write, that bipartisan coalitions are not inherently good and that some have pushed Congress in the wrong direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we have a nostalgia for bipartisanship, and often the idea is they will do better than a partisan approach, and that's just not always the case. In the 1950s and early 1960s, many liberals saw bipartisanship really as one of the worst problems facing Washington because Southern Democrats and Republicans teamed up to do things like block civil rights legislation. And they were very effective as bipartisans, but that's what they accomplished. Mm-hmm. And there were critics of the economic stimulus bill this time around that said what bipartisanship did was to cut this so much that it won't have the effect that we need. And so I think we need to be careful that we're not asking, do we have bipartisanship or not? But what exactly does that bipartisanship seek to accomplish? And that's really the key question, because it often has bad effects.
Right. And it's also difficult to accomplish a kind of bipartisanship when it's striking to me the Republican Party doesn't seem to know where it's going. Is it going to be conservative? Is it going to be moderate Republicans? Who are they?
It's going to be hard, absolutely. I mean, the Republicans still are in a bit of disarray. I think the default position is then to say no, to just be an opponent until you work out what your ideas are. And I think that's where most Republicans are. What Democrats would need for a bipartisan coalition is a few Republicans who really have a strong sense of where their party needs to go and see in their interest align with the administration on key items could actually rebuild the GOP. And I don't think at this point you're right that they have that. So it's a bit of a wandering party, and that makes it very hard in a partisan era when all the incentives favor partisanship to break that pattern.
Mm-hmm. How are they going to decide who they are? Are they in the process of deciding who they are?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, there was this euphoria or optimism about the governors, and Bobby Jindal, mm-hmm. the governor of Louisiana, made the speech after the president's speech, and it by all accounts didn't go so well. A lot of criticism, not from Democrats, but from Republicans. So right now, I don't think the GOP still knows who their next generation is. You know, we don't know who the Newt Gingrich, for example, is of this era, who in the 80s and 90s really defined the party. And until they have that voice, just as Democrats have found Barack Obama, it's very hard for a party to come together, especially after the bad effects of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. Another piece you wrote for CNN.com, which I find very interesting, investigate Wall Street, that congressional investigations have served the country well in many cases, and we need to figure out the causes that have led to our economic downturns using the power of investigation to raise our concern and to improve our knowledge of the economy. Is that forthcoming, or we've seen a little bit of it? How much more do we need?
I think we could use really big hearings, to be honest. I think a lot of Americans are not just scared, but they're totally confused about what's going on. All they're hearing are the numbers about bad things happening. I don't think there's a clear sense of what exactly has gone wrong. And Congress, we often think of hearings and investigations as just, you know, partisan weapons and grandstanding. But I think in history, sometimes Congress has done a nice job of, you know, showing to the public what's going wrong, either in politics or the economy, by bringing people in front of the television cameras, in front of the legislators, and questioning them, forcing them to be accountable in the public eye. Congress can do a good job with that. And I think, you know, hearings equal to either the Watergate hearings in 1973, the PCORA Commission, which took place during the early part of the New Deal, investigating Wall Street. That's the kind of hearings we need right now. I don't think this can only be done through the president.
Right. And people are mad about this, aren't they? Rightfully so. You can't have economic times like this, and we're just looking at one aspect of this, and send people on these lavish vacations with fancy hotel rooms and foods and rock star performers, et cetera, when people are struggling in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of anger right now. It's not just that they're struggling. It's that there is a sense that, you know, the worst is yet to come. And when you have people in that mood, it's a very volatile electorate. Mm. And so I think corporations need to be extraordinarily careful right now. And I think when you have stories like that about junkets and expensive travel, it just fuels the kind of anger that's out there. That said, I think politicians in both parties are also nervous because they know when they have an electorate like that, it could turn against the government, too. Mm-hmm. And it's just unpredictable. We've seen that in the past. It's unstable. So I think, you know, all sides are scrambling not only to do something, but to give the impression that they are on the side of, you know, average Americans trying to get into better times.
Professor Julian Zelizar is our guest, and we're going to welcome phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. We have a couple lines open. We're talking about, well, there's so many issues on the table. President deciding that he would tax those who make the most money in this country to help pay for health care. We're talking about all that he brought forward on his State of the Union, which wasn't a State of the Union address yesterday, what he's taken on. Whether or not Congress needs to more fully investigate Wall Street is the worst yet to come. We can ask Professor Zelizar about that. And so let's go to you in just a moment. Just a reminder, we're in a pledge drive as well. We don't have many of these. And, you know, by golly, these kinds of conversations are so darn important. I know you know they are. So would you please call and pledge 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Professor Julian Zelizar, and our number is 800-486-8655. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University and the author of many, many books that look at U.S. political leaders, policies, institutions since the New Deal. Scott from Green Bay, our first caller. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I just had three quick points. The first one has to do with, you know, the investigation of Wall Street. And I know there's a lot of bad stuff that went on there, but this is really a financial crisis more than anything else, and a liquidity crisis. And we have to remember that it started with people deciding to go to a lender and asking for money, taking out loans that they could never afford because they thought their home value would continue to appreciate because they saw it as an asset as opposed to a place to live. And it does start with people need to take some personal responsibility for getting themselves in trouble. My other point is on bipartisanship in what's going on right now. And this is just my opinion. The way bipartisanship is usually defined and the way it's explained is bipartisanship is Republicans agreeing with Democrats. Then it's bipartisan. When it comes to the stimulus package, the most bipartisanship act that occurred was the no vote in the House because you had 11 Democrats siding with Republicans saying that this is a bad bill. And that never got covered as a bipartisan act, that them going with the Republicans and saying, no, we need to fix this bill. This is a bad bill. And I think that part of bipartisanship should have really been talked about.
Okay, thanks, Scott, for your call. Professor?
Yeah, both points are good. I mean, I don't think an investigation just has to focus on the Madoffs of Wall Street, meaning the people who did bad things and who broke the laws, allegedly broke the laws. I think it can focus just as much on, you know, the financial crisis and what the roots of it are. There's no need. It just has to be about wrongdoing. It could be about bad policies and bad practices. That's what the PCORA Commission did in Wall Street. It wasn't simply about the scandals. It was about the regular practices that took place that you know, created unstable situations, how banking handled investments on a regular basis. So I think Scott's right, but that doesn't mean Congress can't look at that or other parts of government can't look at that. We need to understand how we got here, including home loans, not just the people who took them, but the people who pushed them. And then bipartisanship, I think he's right, and that's why, you know, I don't think many people are happy when they actually see it. It can't just be about Republicans going along with Democrats and vice versa. I think that's how George Bush defined it, Democrats who would support him. And it's often very hard in this day and age to find areas where the parties are in agreement. So another alternative is we'll have just a partisan approach to these issues, and you know, the legislation will work its way out as you get the 60 votes in the Senate.
Thanks, Scott. Mike from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning. Two questions, Professor. First, you know, we talk about there's a lot of anger out there, and I think part of the anger comes from it would seem that there's no accountability. You know, nobody's going to jail for all of these things that have happened to us, and I think that just fuels a lot of anger. It would seem to me that, you know, if we saw some people actually going to jail, be they bankers, politicians, businessmen, you know, whatever, but, you know, who's responsible? There's no answer out there. That's one question. And then it would seem that, and as it should be, you know, we're looking internally with our economic problems, but I'm worried about the international arena, which can have a huge impact here, you know, specifically Iran. They're getting closer and closer. Now we have a new government in Israel, and, you know, what's going to happen there?
But those are good points. I think accountability is what many Americans are looking for. I'm not sure sending people to prison will be the only answer. I mean, that will be part of what we might see. But again, I think what the first caller, Scott, had talked about were structural aspects of the economy that were behind this, the domestic economy and the global economy, again, such as the provision of high-risk loans to people who couldn't afford them. And so, you know, there's different ways to measure accountability, but I think part of it won't just be jailing people. It will be dealing with legislative failures. Was deregulation of the financial industry part of the story of what took place since the 2000 election? And if that's the case, there's going to have to be a legislative solution. But until people see progress, until people see explanations for what's going wrong and corrections, I think the anger will continue. Mm-hmm. The global arena, there's two parts. Part of this is it's a global economic crisis, and I think that's part of what makes it difficult to fix. Even the New Deal and the Great Depression, which was global, was easier to fix just in the United States through laws that just affected our country. That's no longer the case. So part of what's going to happen is international cooperation and discussions, because this just can't be about legislating Wall Street. It has to be about, you know, dealing with markets in China, in England, and I think it's an extraordinary challenge. And foreign policy, which I think Mike was talking about, that's another issue. There's many dangers out there, not just in the Middle East, but involving Afghanistan, the future of Iraq, and other parts of the world that are going to come up. And, you know, Obama can't segment that away, kind of hoping that comes, you know, 2 years from now or never comes at all. It's not inconceivable in 3 weeks or 2 months he's facing a major foreign policy crisis as we're dealing with the economy.
Oh, I hope that doesn't happen. What about progress? I don't know if we can determine that we are seeing a little bit of progress, but everybody talks about we need some hope here. We need to be lifted. Our spirits are down. We're depressed. We need this guy to give us some hope. Do you think that we haven't seen the bottom yet, that worst days are still ahead, or do you think that we're going to see some progress based on the policies that have already been implemented?
I think the policies that have been implemented, namely the economic stimulus, is going to take some time, many months. So if that's going to lift us, then I don't think we've seen the worst yet. Certainly this last week wasn't very good. And there's a lot of evidence that will continue. You know, the financial measures that the Secretary of Treasury is now working on might have a quicker effect. But again, quick is not going to mean a day or two. I think we're talking about seeing bad economic indicators, whether you're talking about Wall Street or unemployment numbers, that are going to last for a little while. And so it's a challenge, I think, for many Americans, and politically it's going to be a challenge for the president. One speech won't eliminate the kind of fears that Americans will see if a friend is losing their job,
right,
or they're taking on five jobs and watching their savings decline. It's hard to become hopeful under those conditions, regardless of what you see someone say.
At least he knows how to give a speech.
He knows how to give a great speech, but that doesn't last too long. And
right.
And so I think the legislation is going to be the name of the game here.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. John from Waukesha. Hi.
Hi. My comment is with respect to congressional hearings and how they would not hold accountable the legislators who enabled the financial foolishness, such as the looseness at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, where the legislators opposed initiatives by President Bush to tighten up the requirements on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and hence made the problem a great deal worse. A congressional hearing never looks into the actions of Congress.
Well, congressional hearings are hard to control. Again, going back to one example, the Watergate hearings in 73 opened up many doors that included members, powerful members of Congress, and campaign contributions they had received from the system and ties with interest groups that came out of those hearings, which were certainly not what the original intention was. So part of the good thing about hearings is they can get out of control, and you don't know exactly where they're going to go. It really depends what people say and what's revealed in the process of the discussion. So I think you're absolutely right in that legislators are going to try to protect themselves, both with Fannie Mae issues, also with deregulation issues, which I think are equally important. But the hearings can take a life of their own. And certainly, I think, you know, you want some information that's better than none. And then you can anticipate some of that will come out in the process of the discussions or subsequent reports by the media on what is actually going on. That's another way it happens in terms of an investigation expanding.
Thank you, John, so much for the call. Please stay with us, all of you who are on the line. We'll continue momentarily with Professor Julian Zelizar. Don't you love this guy? I feel like I'm in his class at Princeton every time we have him on the air, and it's just the best. It's a class I look forward to every single day because he's so good and so insightful. He's a professor at Princeton University, professor of history and public affairs, and author of a ton of books. He's also contributes to the Washington Post, Huffington Post, CNN, Newsweek, L.A. Times, Boston Globe, American Prospect, and has written many, many books, and has four books going right now, Jimmy Carter's Presidency, The Reagan Revolution, an edited volume about the George W. Bush presidency, and also looking at national security policies since World War II. So we'll continue with him in a moment. Stay on the line, please. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we are in this winter pledge drive, and my days are getting numbered in terms of asking for your support here for this particular program. So we want to ask for your support. Here's how you get a hold of us, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. Rhonda Fanning, our producer, joining me in the studio. Hello, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
We have a goal this hour of $2,500, and we are inching up there, but keep those calls coming or keep logging onto our website. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported, and that means your pledge helps us make this program possible. And as Kathleen said, she feels like she's in Julian Zelizer's Princeton classroom each and every time that he's on. So this is kind of the only time that someone gets to choose how much they pay for college tuition. This is continuing education each
like
and every day here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's not often that you get to set your own bill for your tuition costs. So think about what that means to you and make your pledge of support online at WPR.org or give us a call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Chances are the Ideas Network and our show in particular has covered an issue that is close to you. We talk about so many different topics and issues, the economy, national security, education. We had Elizabeth Alexander with us this week talking about the inaugural poem. We just have all kinds of people who inspire us and inform us. Because WPR touches your life, we ask you to please make a pledge. Help us reach our goal this hour, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552 is so easy. All it takes is a gift or a dollar or two a week and 3 minutes of your time. A dollar or two a week and 3 minutes of your time all year long. You're going to be doing your part to benefit this program and all of the WPR programs that you love and that you count on each and every day. So consider putting your donation on your credit card. That saves us time and money. Make your contribution online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Call now.
Call now. And thank you very much, everybody. We'll continue our conversation with Professor Julian Zelizar and count on the fact that you're going to be contributing to us. We also want to thank all of you who have pledged during this drive, particularly to this program.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. Let's go back to phone calls for Professor Julian Zelizar. Our number 800-486-8655. Mike from Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Professor. I have in front of me a book called The Man Who Sold the World, Ronald Reagan and the Betrayal of Main Street America, and Chapter 5 is The Looting of America. And I think that the situation we are in was entirely predictable. Everyone talks about the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, and I think that is one of the root causes of this problem. The other is the repeal of the McFadden Act, an act that was implemented in 1927 to prevent interstate banking, and that was repealed under Ronald Reagan. And in this book, I think we in Wisconsin should be proud that our prophetic Senator William Proxmire said in 1981 when this law was repealed that it would lead to exactly the situation we're in. This is not surprising. Both parties repealed these two laws which were designed to prevent the catastrophe of the Great Depression, and the repealing of these laws has resulted in the repeat of the Great Depression. I'd like to hear your
comments. Thank you, Mike.
I think that's an important point. It's a counterpoint to the previous call, which talked about high-risk loans and the responsibility of people who didn't handle their money well. That's one argument. And the second argument is there were legislative decisions. The repeal of this McFadden Act, which he's talking about regarding interstate banking, the Glass-Steagall Act, which had really been the regulations we put into place in the New Deal to handle a lot of the issues that we're dealing with right now on Wall Street and how banks handle their money. And the repeal of those two pieces of legislation and some other decisions were a move toward deregulation that we saw take place in the 1970s and 80s, which Reagan fully embraced, and it was a core Republican argument. I mean, the argument was simple. Tax cuts and deregulation are essential to stimulating economic growth. And I think right now many Americans are wondering, is that the case? Is that true? And were the costs of those deregulations far greater than any benefit we had over the last three decades? So I think that is something Congress and the President are going to need to deal with, and do we restore some of the regulations which were put into place in the 30s and 20s to avert exactly what we're going through right now?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Let's spend just a moment or two on the first 100 days. You've written about this recently, an invention of the New Deal. How important is this? Does it really forever label a president as being, good, great, marvelous?
It is important. I mean, I don't think it's naturally important, but what happens is now we've accepted that as an important measure. We, meaning reporters, have accepted that as an important measure, and they're going to use, how the first 100 days go to start writing about the president. So it matters just in that respect. And that takes on a life of its own. If he's seen as weak after 100 days, and that's what you're reading about and watching and listening to, that the president couldn't accomplish that much, what will happen after 100 days, or many Republicans will be that much more confident they can challenge him, and they will cause more problems for him, and they will make legislation harder to obtain. And wavering Democrats as well, Democrats in states where they can't count on winning in 2010. So that's how something like the 100 days can take on a life of its own, even though it's really an artificial measure. So I do think it's important.
Mm-hmm. Rick from West Bend, our next caller. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, Rick.
You can hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I got a couple points, but I think all of this started with, let me go back. I think capitalism is based on materialism. And over the years, we developed a whole lot of extra money from pension plans and retirement plans and everything else. And they didn't know what to do with it. So they created a financial industry, and that grew, but there was no material asset behind it. And eventually it got to the point they weren't creating jobs. They weren't creating anything that would sustain the economy. And it just went downhill from there. They should have gone out with that money that was put out as excess money and really taken advantage of it to develop the country and the world.
Professor Zelizer.
I think, those kind of comments are indicative of people searching for what's going on here. And there's going to be a lot of theories, from very practical and more specific arguments about loans and deregulation to broader arguments about, how our financial system works, what it does or does not produce, and how that leads to moments like these that we have seen in the past. And I think, you know, that's why there's a lot of pressure on politicians to take some control of the situation. Ultimately, if you want to restore confidence, you need to give some answers to these kinds of questions, in some sense of who's right and who's wrong, what's solvable, what's just a broader problem in American capitalism. Until you provide some of that education, so to speak, it's going to be very hard to get people to put their money down again. And so that's what's going to be the challenge of the next few months, as much as the legislation.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. Let's talk about the support of the American public for a moment, Professor Zelizar. At this moment, the president is enjoying pretty high favorability ratings. How does that factor into his ability to pass legislation? How much of that does he need in order to pass legislation?
Well, it's important. I mean, ultimately, that popularity is crucial to building pressure on members of Congress. The Senate, though, doesn't work. It's not a majoritarian institution, and a few senators can really hold up the legislation through the threat of a filibuster. We saw that with the economic stimulus bill, where Susan Collins, a senator, and Ben Nelson, a Democrat, really were able to team up and force Obama, very popular, to cut down the bill much more than he ever intended to do. And so because of how the Senate work, I think we need to be careful in reading public polls and popularity as translating into legislative success. John F. Kennedy was enormously popular throughout his first 100 days and throughout his whole presidency, and yet almost none of what he wanted domestically passed, because a conservative coalition of Southern Democrats and Republicans stifled him through the legislative process again and again and again on medical care for the aged, civil rights, even tax cuts. The legislative institution does not work, you know, based on popularity ratings, and and I think the president learned that lesson already. Look how he started. He started with a big bill, but one that's not nearly as ambitious as he had hoped for.
So why not let a filibuster happen?
That is one argument. Let the opponents filibuster legislation and put them in the spotlight rather than the administration. And there are some Democrats who say that's exactly what should happen. And by not actually filibustering, we allow opponents almost an escape. On the other hand, that could really undermine the confidence of Americans. They hate to see the filibuster. They might not be able to regain confidence the government's going to do something. That would hurt markets. That would hurt Obama. That would hurt Democrats. So it's hard to kind of play out how something like that would work, and I think some are nervous about letting it go on.
Let's go to Dan from Eau Claire. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I just have a question. One of the things that I've observed with Congress members is that we tend to have a lot of lawyers in Congress. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are, Professor, on the idea that maybe we need to get to more of a citizen scientist type engineer, medical person that gets involved in the congressional process to help bring a little bit of that focus that President Obama wants of bringing the science and technology and bringing it to the forefront and helping with the process.
That's a good point. I actually don't know right now what the breakup is of professions and you know, who's in Congress. It tends to be lawyers. He's absolutely right. And given the direction of our economy and the importance of these areas, you know, there's an argument to be made. We'd want to see more sciences, more health professionals taking these roles, because it does matter in terms of how sensitive they are to certain programs or their ability to evaluate, you know, where the economy and where legislation needs to go. So I don't see any argument against that at all. I mean, there's no need just to have lawyers being members of Congress. That said, it doesn't always go as predicted. Some thought that about Senator Frist, who was a very accomplished doctor, but in the end, he earned a lot of opposition for what he did. So, you know, politics can shape you regardless of what profession you originally start with. But I think the argument's very valid. We want as diverse a group in there, not just socially, but professionally, so that if we're dealing with the healthcare crisis now, and that's part of this budget, it would be nice to have healthcare professionals and scientists looking at this and playing a role in its passage or in blocking it. Either way, they'll have more information.
Professor Julian Zelizar is our guest on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Julian Zelizar, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of a ton of books on policies and presidencies since the New Deal, is our guest. And let's go to Chris from Oshkosh next. Hi, Chris. Whoa, Chris, we got a bad phone here. Get there. Hello? Yeah, I'm sorry. He actually wanted to talk about the war, and let me ask you a little bit about that as well. What do you think of the president's plans that will be announced very soon about pulling out, when we're going to pull out from Iraq, and allocation of resources to Afghanistan? Some have said this is his road to Vietnam.
You know, Vietnam started as something very small, smaller than Afghanistan is right now, and the commitment just expanded, multiplied, and ultimately consumed Lyndon Johnson's presidency. Mm-hmm. We don't know if Afghanistan would be that, but I think there's a lot of people urging caution. The withdrawal from Iraq has a lot of support, not just with Democrats, but Republicans. I think there's a sense that mission is over, and it's time to leave and let Iraq do what it needs to do to prop up a civil government, a democratic government, if possible. Afghanistan's an unknown quantity. You know, many countries have failed when they've gone in there. We really had a very short operation there following 9/11 and quickly started to withdraw our resources from the area, and we've had problems there ever since. So I think President Obama needs to be clear. I mean, there's basic questions that need to be answered before he goes in. What's the threat and why are we sending people there? You know, what exactly is our mission there? What are we doing there? And ultimately, what's the exit strategy? And unless the president has an answer to all three questions, I think he should be very reluctant to send any troops there.
Mm-hmm. Tim is next from Luck. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. I would like to speak about a piece of legislation that Bush enacted when he first took office, and that was to allow the banks and the credit card companies to rewrite the bankruptcy laws. The bankruptcy laws were put into effect to because they felt that, you know, due to illness or something, going bankrupt wasn't a criminal, and it was there to protect people. And what the banking industry did was to rewrite the laws to protect the banks. You used to be able to protect equity in your home and things like that. Now you can protect equity in a second home, but not your main residence. You know, and things like this were, as far as I'm concerned, that just opened the floodgate for the banks at this point. Am I still on there?
Yes, yes, you
okay.
are, Tim.
Okay, and you know, but I mean, they rewrote it so okay, we can borrow money. We can do just about anything. We can't lose. A person can't file bankruptcy and and keep their home, and the courts can't rewrite the amounts, and you know that just opened right up to allowing just about anything goes.
All right, Professor Zelizar.
Well, it's clear that there is a credit crisis taking place, meaning there was a vast expansion of credit that people have been warning against, frankly, in the last couple of decades, from credit cards to larger purchases. There was a deregulation of this credit industry, so there were very few checks taking place on, you know, what kinds of loans were offered, the information people received about what they were getting themselves into, and at the same time, some of the protections from those hurt from bad credit moments was abandoned. And so all of this was kind of a bad, it was moving the economy in a bad direction, and that's part of what we're paying the price for now. And I think the president did talk about that a little bit when he talked about a credit crisis being at the heart of the current situation, and I think we're going to need to deal with it. Protection will be part of it, but really rebuilding the whole system is essential, because until the money starts flowing again, we can't revitalize the economy. So we need to figure out how to get from those problems to that better future.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. Well, Professor Zelizar, you're just marvelous. Thank you so much. I love having you on the air. It's just, you're just so good. And thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Julian Zelizar, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, who joins us actually quite frequently to talk about the many, and the list keeps getting larger and larger, issues of the day. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our winter pledge drive. It's all important to us, and it's easy to make your donation. Go online for conversations just like this. To have a guest like this, I feel like I just learned so much from him, and he's so well-spoken, and now we go on to our next class, because that's what he is. He's a professor, and he's darn good. Here's the website, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552. And we have this neat thing going on just for a few minutes here, Rhonda, don't we? Yes, we do.
We do. Let me tell everyone about it. We just received word that we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,000 in effect for the next 8 minutes or so till the end of the hour. And it's offered by existing members. So your gift of 50 turns into 100, or your gift of 100 turns into 200. Ah. You get the idea.
Yeah.
I could go on, but...
No, I like this.
Yeah. So double the amount, the pledge power that you have for the next 8 minutes. So call now. This is a great opportunity for these existing members. They want to get you to become a member or renew your membership. So please give online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
This would be a wonderful time to give because, as Rhonda said, I know a little bit... Not very much about math, but you're doubling your money. I think I got that concept. If you give 100,
that's an easy way.
You're giving $200.
If you give
that's
500,
that's fabulous.
If you give 1,000, it's 2,000.
Yeah. Well, I know many of you love politics. That was very good math, Rhonda.
I know. And, I'm so proud.
and love guests like this. He's just the best. So I would say pledge now. That's what I would say at WPR.org or call toll free at 888-202-2552.
That's right. You've made the decision to continually listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, but now make the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio. The correlation is as simple as that, and pledging is simple, too. Go to WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552. And again, for the next 6 minutes or so, you're going to double the amount of your pledge.
Yeah, this is the time to call. This is it. And think about all the programs we've had just recently. Julian Zelizar is a regular guest of ours, and he's all over the place. He's very well spoken. We had Elizabeth Alexander. George McGovern has joined us recently. Stephen Hess, somebody new we found who will be on again, who worked in the Eisenhower administration yesterday.
Gwen Ifill was on last week.
Yeah, we cover politics. I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I will at this point. Because I don't think too many other people have the enthusiasm we do to begin with for these topics. We've been doing it for a long time now, and I think we're bringing you the best. So that's worth, well, two for one now. Give 100, you're really giving 200. A-OK is in my book. Call 888-202-2552.
Whatever it is, Wisconsin Public Radio is going to be here for you. We're watching for the latest information, the topics that interest you. We host our open lines. We take your suggestions. It was a caller who called in and requested David K. Johnston's two people call during that open line about the fiscal therapy
right.
and the state of the economy from
he
Mother
was
Jones.
Marvelous.
We got him on, realized that his book, Free Lunch, was... going to be published soon, so he came back on because he enjoyed it the first time. But that was a listener, the tip that we received. We may have let that one slip. So it's kind of a mutually beneficial relationship that we have here between the producers and Kathleen and our listeners. So invest in your future listening. So please donate now. Go securely to our website, WPR.org, or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
And please do it this hour, everybody, just to say thank you for the quality of the guests this hour and all of our hours. And also, it's this two-for-one. Listeners who already contribute have generously decided they will match your dollar. 100, you give 100, 200 is what you give. How often does money happen like that? 200, you're given 400.
That's right. Can't often double your money.
Right.
But it's just going to take a couple of minutes, and you can do so. So get online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
It's one source where you can get in-depth reports. You can get information about things you didn't even know you wanted to know about. It's real people talking about real things. They talk about musicians in Iraq, you know, rock and roll in Iraq, or in Pakistan or in India. There's no other source like this. What we have here is so wonderful, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. I'm John Ink from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is my source for a clear view of the world.
Call with your pledge, 888-202-2552-WPR.org. We also, as you know, you talked about the listener making suggestions. Listeners are such a crucial part of this show and make the quality of this program very, very good. I think it's a major reason why people come on to be on this program. So thanks for being so smart.
That's right. You're smart. Kathleen and I and our guests will never forget that. We never take that for granted. So please don't take Wisconsin Public Radio for granted. If you've listened for years and never given before, or maybe you used to pledge but you haven't done so in a long time, now is the time to renew it, especially this hour.
Right.
Because of that dollar-for-dollar match in effect for the next 4 minutes from existing listeners trying to get you to donate right now.
This moment.
That's right.
Pick
for the next
the
few
phone.
Minutes, your gift of $100 turns into a gift of $200. You can double the buying power of your pledge, but only for the next 4 minutes. So give now online at WPR.org or call toll-free 202-2552.
Again, that number, you're given $100, you're really given $200. What a great thing. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for all her hard work. Thanks for helping me pledge. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for helping us out this hour. Thank you, everybody, for all of your calls, too, during this pledge. And remember, just keep them going during the news. That would be marvelous. We'll be able to increase our money in an easy fashion because other people are willing to give. Thanks to John Treader for helping us out here for 5 years. He's come in and answered phones for us with his cheery voice. Thank you. And thanks thanks to everybody. What's the number again, Rhonda?
It's 888-202-2552, and quickly that website, WPR.org.
All right, great. We have another hour coming up, so please stay with us. We'll have a great hour. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News ahead, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.